Welcome to the Ether. Today is Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. Today on the Ether, the Cosmos Hub, Fireside Chat number 18, discussing IST and Agoric updates with Dean Tribble. Let's take a listen.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, Dean. Welcome, Cryptocito, to the weekly Fireside Chat.
What's up? It's like forever since we last got together like this. I think it's two weeks.
Yeah, we were swapping back and forth. We did it last week without you. I think there was one before that, too, that one of us did it without the other one. So got the whole squad back together. And glad to have Dean. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I feel like many people know who you are, but maybe it's worth giving you a quick intro. How would you like yourself introduced? I feel like there's a myriad of ways.
Oh, I want to hear what you have to say.
Dean Tribble, architect of the internet, member of all of the standards related to JavaScript, and co-founder of Agoric, a smart contract platform with secure JavaScript and DeFi primitives in the Cosmos ecosystem, which is first product is IST, stable token backed by Atom. How's that?
That's awesome. The only correction I'll make is I didn't do all those things, but I know.
Just don't question it.
I would add to that, Dean is the new master of stable.
There content. You go.
There we go. Yes, there we go.
Stable Dean, welcome. What am I missing from the intro? How would you introduce yourself?
Oh, I think that was pretty good. You know, long time OG, long time, you know, working in the space of smart contracts before there was blockchain, and really excited when this new opportunity and platform came out. So we're producing a Cosmos based platform for smart contracts and hardened JavaScript, and on top of that, we're producing a next generation stable token for the Cosmos ecosystem. So. Very excited about all of those.
I'm just curious. I think, I mean, we're already right in it. I wanted to actually start with consensus recap. I think we can get there in a second, but share a little bit more, you know, your time, your crypto journey, and also how you stumbled, like how and when you stumbled upon and what caught you in the first place to excite you about that ecosystem.
I will do that. And I hear some occasional clicking, by the way, drowning you out. So, I started in smart contracts. I was working with my co-founder, Mark Miller, back at Xerox PARC a long time ago. I worked on the first production smart contract in 1989. So that's a while ago, shall we say. And that was all, you know, that was all smart contracts where software is enforcing the terms of contract-like arrangement between third parties. And so that grew up into a lot of businesses like, you know, eBay and PayPal and Venmo and all these things that don't have anything to do with blockchain, but they have a lot to do with software enabling strangers to cooperate. And that just always, you know, the idea of having computers really give leverage to people and enable new ways of organizing and new ways of cooperating and giving people extending their reach has just always been a real motivator for me and for a lot of the rest of the team. And so you know, when blockchain came along with its high integrity, suddenly you could build smart contracts that did not need trusted intermediaries like eBay and StubHub and so forth. And so now suddenly I could have software that really directly enabled new kinds of cooperation between people. And that was, you know, and that was pretty awesome. I got into crypto. Actually, it was, you know, Zuka was one of the main people, but friends at the Foresight Institute, Mark Miller, et cetera, that saw horrible security problems happening in 2017 and knew that, you know, a bunch of us had done a lot of other security stuff And so brought us in to say, could all this, you know, different approach to security help with smart contracts on the blockchain? And the answer turned out to be yes. And so Agoric was born. And then we trundled along for a while building stuff, working on our, you know, our model of loosely coupled distributed systems, and finally encountered the Cosmos folks. You know, Zucky and Sonny and Tony Arcieri showed up here one day to talk about, you know, IBC and what we were doing for distribution and did they make sense together? And that sort of, you know, started a long conversation with you guys that got us into helping to finish the architecture and build out of IBC and really, you know, it's like we found our peeps. So we've been in the Cosmos since.
They're all 2017, 18, around that range.
Yeah, what was first Interchain Conversations? That was like 2019. We had met, some of the Cosmos folk at like, you know, Web3 and at ZCon, but you guys were heads down actually shipping, which, you know, was the right priority. It was in 2019, it was early 2019 that we first connected, and then we had a nice powwow in the 2019 Interchain Conversations to go through our distributed system stuff and IBC requirements and see whether they meshed, and they meshed beautifully. It wasn't until months and months later that I found out that this was partly because Zucky and Ethan and Jay, you know, Zucky had found some of our earlier, you know, distributed system stuff, and it inspired some of what you know became IBC. And so, you know, all of the ideas, we were all coming from the same place of these nice, you know, independent, loosely coupled systems. And that's just, you know, from my view, the way systems ought to work. And so, we then got really going together in 2019.
Yeah, that crypto conference in 2019 always comes back as sort of like a legendary event. The whiteboarding session, awesome. The hackathon with CosmWasm came up there, Groups module, Off-Z. It was productive.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where all this potential in Cosmos, once you get past that launch thing where now there's this real thing, suddenly you can explode with all the opportunities it enables, and people went off and, you know, we're suddenly able to do all those things.
And yeah, we're only shipping them now. I feel like they were actually like proof of concept right there, but putting things yep. final touches, Jesus, it takes so long sometimes.
Yes, the second 90%, yeah. Yep, well, we're working hard on our second 90% so we can ship.
it seems like, I mean, I joined Cosmos relatively late, I would say. It was like early 2021, late 2020, when I really learned about it. But it feels like from talking to a lot of the teams and core developers over a year now, and it's all been in the works for so many years, and it's all coming together now, and IBC is just getting this adoption that has been like a goal for so many years since like the birth of Cosmos in the first place. But I think given the current market sentiment in mind, and we talked about this, Billy, a couple of weeks ago, you know, that builders are focused on building, and especially through bear market times, it's the best time to build because that's where you can have, you know, more peace, less external noise. But I'm curious, Dian and Billy, if you also have anything to share, like, how do you feel right now, especially being in the Cosmos ecosystem? I think a lot of people, like, they need to be reminded of, you know, the sustainability of Cosmos in the long term, that it's, I mean, it originated in a bear market, right? That's when it launched. So, how, you know, maybe you can share some thoughts about the long-term vision of Cosmos and how you see it play out over the next years, eventually decades or centuries.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I feel like I've started to see and also look forward to, I mean, maybe it hasn't fully happened yet, but just the ratio of signal to noise. So during a bull market, there's just so much noise, like scams. There's a new project every day. It's easy to raise money, so bad ideas get funded, and all of a sudden there's just so much more stuff that you have to be like, wait a minute, is this legit? Is this a scam? Is this real? Is this copy paste of something else? And it's like, it's so overwhelming just to like navigate that while also being able to focus on your own thing. And you know, bear market, people start tightening belts. It just becomes less profitable for people who just show up and cause noise to necessarily do that. And so I think that's why actually people are able to build so well in the bear market. It's just because there's less like loud bells ringing in their face all the time of like, hey, look at this. Hey, look at this. And so I do look forward to that and sort of start to see that coming up. I mean, I don't know if we're going to actually feel that until like actual winter, maybe. There's probably going to be like a die-off period, and there's obviously so much sort of like stuff on Twitter to look at right now with Celsius exploding and just like, oh my gosh, what is, you know, the crash is still, you know, in full motion. So it's not like that noise to signal thing has stopped, although I guess you could say this is also important signals. It's not like noise. So looking forward to that aspect of buckling up and building for sure, and looking like it's just around the corner. That doesn't say so much about the like longer term thing, but just as a response to the first part, maybe Dean, you could speak to that too as well. We could talk about the longer term stuff.
Yeah, I've been in the Silicon Valley for a long time, and obviously, as you mentioned earlier, part of many rounds of growth of the internet, and it had a lot of the same kinds of cycles. But people would physically come to Silicon Valley to participate in this stuff, and so the sentiment after, you know, some of the crashes that would happen was like, oh, thank God all the tourists went home, right? And it feels a little bit like that, you know, that as you say, now we can focus and get some work done. You made, you know, Kripsita, you made the comment about all the stuff. It seems like it's all coming together now. The thing about exponentials is, you know, the curve looks the same no matter where you're at in the curve, right? And so I think what will happen is we're going to get multiple cycles of exactly that, where it is in fact the case that all this stuff is coming together now to be able to do a bunch of things in Cosmos. But, you know, last May when IBC finally came together and was launched for real, you know, and you know, Osmosis came out and stuff, suddenly all these things we were working on came together and you could point at it and it was awesome, right? And we're going to have multiple rounds of that because there's just so much made possible by this, you know, by this model of loosely coupled systems, because it means every independent zone is innovating independently and then bringing their cool stuff to the table. As Billy says, now people start building. We're going to start seeing some of those pieces roll out. And the nice thing is they roll out and connect so easily to everything else that, you know, A, it's good that there isn't a lot of shouting of six different things that all look very similar, but B, that there's now clear paths for those to, you know, come out, connect to other people and show off what they got. So I'm excited about what we will start to see in later this year.
Yeah. Funny that you mentioned the dot-com boom. My dad just came here where I am right now, so I'm spending time with my family, and he's a strong doubter of crypto. He always draws the comparison to, you know, the early internet and how a lot of these industries and promises just died out and nothing came out of it. But I think you can still draw comparisons to back then, and obviously when things go up and everybody makes money, like Billy said, bad ideas get funded. You have a lot of BS that, you know, is probably 80, 90, maybe even 95% of the market. But some of it is genuine innovation, right? And I believe personally,
right,
being in the space now for 5 years, which is way less than I guess you guys are, and you know, with the whole background that you have, you are the real builders. And I love to just be part of that and just see that growing from zero, from absolute scratch to something. And I think we, even though we crashed now to like, what, $900 billion in market cap for all cryptocurrencies, that's still a lot within just 12 or 13 years. And I think sometimes people just have to zoom out and focus on the on the fundamental innovation that's going on, which you mentioned earlier, like smart contracts, cryptocurrency accounting, programmable money, and all these kind of things.
Yeah, you said your dad's view of, you know, it's easy to have the view that all this stuff is crap. Sturgeon's law is really important here, right? Which Sturgeon's law is that 90% of everything is crap, right? The important difference between 90% and 100% is 90% looks like 100%. It looks like everything I see is crap, right? But that 10% that is hard to winnow out, that's maybe hard to identify, that 10% is enormous innovation. So in all of those waves of the internet, you'd have this roll of investment, 90% of which was utter crap, but 10% of it moved the planet forward. And we got the same thing here, right? There is true fundamental technical innovation driven by crypto that could not happen any other way, in Byzantine fault tolerance, in zero knowledge, in formal methods, all these areas that have huge potential for advancing human progress, advancing computer science, advancing our overall safety for distributed systems. And they were not getting funded. They were not getting the attention and leverage that they needed in order to make progress, because they're really damn hard. And the thing that this, that the fact that crypto is able to leverage that has ended up resulting in those things advancing in ways that they never could have otherwise. And each wave of crypto leverages the next advance in those things. And that, I mean, I think that, you know, 20 years from now, we will look back and be so incredibly relieved that that happened. That will be such value to the world we live in and the systems we use and all that sort of stuff.
I am curious in the comparison, like how many .com companies were like infrastructure level companies compared to like end user level companies. Because I feel like in the crypto industry, there's so many of them building these kind of like infrastructure level things, these building blocks that you're talking about right now that, you know, enable another class of companies and continue to like, you know, exponentially increase the possibilities when you combine them, et cetera. Balances.
I don't know. Do you remember how many companies were laying fiber and dark fiber because they were going to take over the world with selling, you know, high bandwidth networks at the prices that people paid for phone lines? You know, that's an example of vast numbers of infrastructure companies, most of which went away and got absorbed. But that fiber ended up being the backbone of the modern internet.
Interesting comparison. The other
thing, if they hadn't done that, we wouldn't have the modern internet.
Right. Yeah. The other thing that makes me think of is that sort of, not joke, but saying that like, there's no bad ideas, just bad timing. I think it's like Andreessen Horowitz or something. And like how many 1990s, .com companies that went bust, like the actual idea ended up, you know, being a massive success just like 10 years later or something.
Right, right. Yeah. Hey, I've been those companies, man. I finally feel like I'm at the right time for this stuff. So let's talk about that.
Right. just hoping that in a bear market, you know, the crypto companies who have the right idea can also stay lean enough and can last through the bear to make sure that great idea really does see product market fit and explosion there.
Yep.
We do see at the same time though that, you know, like you mentioned earlier, Celsius, and we talked about Terra also a couple of weeks ago. There are some highly experimental things going on. There are some protocols, product services that are not going to make it. So it's still early, and a lot of this is being figured out.
Yep.
I think This was a good rant, and you can tell Dian is extremely passionate. Whenever I talk to Dian, I'm fired up about crypto, about life, about myself, about everything. I just want to FOMO buy anything. So yeah, I think Dian, you should be here every week from now on. But yeah, I wanted to get, because you both have been at Consensus. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there. We also had a lot of traveling in the past few months for me, but seems like it was pretty cool. I personally peaked at FOMOing. And I saw that tweet from Zach that said thing like, is that Atom Value cool with us in the room?
Wait, what was the tweet? Say it again.
It's like, is that Atom Value cool in the room? And then a picture of Ethan, of Bucky, and Billy. So yeah, that was peak FOMO for me. Maybe you guys can share kind of like the overall vibe of the conference.
You're cutting out a little bit, but I think you're asking us to give a little bit of an overview of the vibe and what it was like. I was going to say, if Curious Cosmonaut Research is on anyone else's radar, they made, I think, the best tweet thread summary that I read so far. 36 tweets, @CCosmonaut_, shout out. There was like three or four different stages happening, different things. There was events every night, good parties. The favorite one for me was probably the day that Dean, you were part of, where we had, I think, five ecosystem projects speak on the foundation stage. I gave an overview of Cosmos Hub mission vision, had Q&A from CoinDesk, and then did a panel. There was also a technical demo of the latest from Figment CLI and some updates to how Ignite's working. The other projects on that panel with Dean were Osmosis, and Juno, and I mentioned Ignite.
Regen.
And Regen, yeah.
Yep. So, I really enjoyed that panel. I thought it was really good to sort of see that broad perspective of systems that were all, you know, different, slightly related missions, but all able to leverage each other and build on each other. I think that's exactly, you know, the model of, you know, as I said, independent sovereign things, all voluntarily, you know, loosely coupled and connected. You know, I think that's the best part about the spirit of the Cosmos ecosystem, and it's, you know, and it was just great to see it both technically and socially happening in real time.
Totally. I mean, that was a bit of the, like, that panel thing too, you know, just even realizing with that specific group, everybody there had been, you know, employees at Tendermint Inc. at one point. I think they made a blog article about the, like, Tendermint Mafia, you know, everybody, like, going off in different directions, but all of the work that they're still doing being, like, intimately tied to the other people's work.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's, in case we run out of time, my, you know, the thing that most excites me about that from a product point of view, that's because IBC supports, you know, messaging about assets and transfer of funds and you know, application protocols and that sort of thing. It has the rails for an economy, you know, a cross-chain economy operating in smart contracts and services on all these different chains. And the one thing that's missing there, especially now, but I mean, I would say it was always missing, is a stable token to be able to have that economy thrive. You know, you can have barter economies, like, you know, where you're swapping a highly volatile asset, but, you know, we learned a lot about how to get past that in, you know, a few hundred or thousand years ago. And we know that having a good stable token for being, you know, for gluing together economic activities in different places around the globe is hugely valuable. Cosmos really needs that kind of stable token. And that's what, you know, almost entirely coincidentally, Agoric was already working on the stuff that needed, you know, the Interchain needs to be able to really have interchain commerce flourish. And so it was just exciting to see all of those pieces there where, you know, each one of those independent chains would be stronger connected with IBC to the others and would be even stronger connected with, you know, a stable token so they could trade value easily.
Absolutely. I mean, these building blocks of compounding value are sort of recurring as a theme of blockchain, of course. Do you want to maybe give us a quick rundown of the sort of like building blocks and DeFi primitives that Agoric is supplying and how they relate to Atom?
Sure. You know, Agoric is designed in general for nice component, rapid development of smart contracts in JavaScript. But the first release will be later this year, where it's a specific set of contracts that provide, you know, sort of the basic market services to lay the groundwork for an economy so that future developers can deploy businesses rapidly. But that first set is a stable token, you know, people call it stable coins, currencies, what have you. It's, you know, what we require is that it be have stable value from day to day so you can easily trade in terms of it and pricings in terms of it. And so it's called Inter. It's the Inter protocol where this is native IBC stable tokens. So I can't, you know, so all of you Atom holders out there can bring Atom over IBC to the Agoric platform, create a vault. Like a MakerDAO style over collateralized vault, but it's native to the platform. You know, so lock up your atoms, create a vault, get IST for interstable token, which is a, you know, dollar parity token that you can then bring back to, you know, Osmosis to put in curves, Juno to buy, you know, contracts, Stargaze to buy NFTs, what have you. But it ends up meaning that, you know, with this, the assets of the IBC ecosystem, of the Interchain ecosystem, can become the collateral that is used for a stable token. So it's not, you know, buy our collateral in order to get a stable token. It's take your collateral, bring it over to Agoric, get the stable token, bring it back and party. Or you know, if there are people that already have it there, you can just use it there and never come over to Agoric at all. But IST becomes this, you know, as I say, dollar parity token that you can just use for all of the purposes that you expect to have a stable token for, and you can use it across the interchain easily. That's the goal. And that's sort of our first big set of components.
Yeah, I mean, one of the, obviously right now, especially one of the biggest concerns about stablecoins is that, you know, they're not stable.
So that's right.
We've seen a lot of coins collapse. We've also seen over the years, I think DAI, they never really lost a peg, if I recall correctly, but sometimes they derailed a little bit. And most recently, I think I read something about USDD, which is the stable coin of Tron, I think. And then Justin came out and said, like, we're going to deploy more capital and defend the peg and get no chance. I mean, this seems to be like a kind of a war going on right now against stable coins. And a lot of these economic game theories and designs are being stress tested to the absolute maximum. And a lot of coins actually are failing that test. So for the community, I think a lot of people are scared of a Cosmos native stablecoin because they think, let's say it's primarily backed by Atom, if there's anything wrong in the design at some point, it could drain the Atom price. It could mean massive, you know, bloodbath for Atom if that whole thing is successful until it isn't. So can you share a little bit more in terms of the security, how to ensure the peg is at $1, how to ensure that, you know, liquidations don't lead to a mass sell bloodbath for Atom? Because I think that's the biggest question that everyone has around that.
Sure. Yeah. So first let's put a couple of things to rest, right? You know, there are algo stable coins, and then there's, you know, fully or over collateralized stable tokens. And then there's, you know, account backed stable tokens, right? So USDC is an account backed stable token where there's, you know, dollar for dollar in there. But the things like UST and frankly USDD, right? Those are ones where there's some clever fantasy algorithm that things will be stable, but they're not fully backed. And that's a pretty critical difference. The other, so you know, that things which are not fully backed, you know, they work until the market collapses and then they are strained and they go away. And that's what we saw happen with UST, and lots of people warned about that it was not, you know, backed by real assets. The other thing is people have this like, oh my God, it could have this big impact on the Atom price, because, you know, with Luna and UST, the architecture was such that it could mint new Luna and thus devalue the Luna price. Nothing in IST can mint the underlying capital assets, right? You know, this is one of those things where the capital assets have the value that they have, and you're borrowing against that. But, you know, but nothing on our side can end up minting new Atom and causing Atom to be valued, to devalue. You know, the way that you know, the CDP style vaults work. As long as they can liquidate, you know, you have a vault where I bring $200 worth of Atom and I borrow $100 worth of IST against it, right? And there's we'll talk about the process by which IST is, you know, stays at parity around a dollar, right? But if the Atom price goes up, no big deal, you could borrow more. If the Atom price goes down past the liquidation threshold, the engine just needs to be able to sell that Atom at a price that's more than $100, and then everything is solvent. There's no risk. So you know, as long as it can liquidate faster than the market falls, then it's straightforward, right? You know, that over-collateralization is your primary protection against the routine volatility of the Atom, and even extreme volatility of Atom, right? It's a capital value. It goes up and down. You're over-collateralized in order to protect the solvency and parity, dollar parity of IST against market fluctuation. And so what happened with DAI was not an economic problem, you know, whatever it was 2 years ago, was not an economic problem. It's that their liquidation pipeline was busted. And that's something that you have to stress, you have to make sure is smooth and robust and so forth. But as long as that's working, doesn't matter whether the market goes up or the market goes down, the stable token can stay stable, right? And so a lot of our engineering, a lot of our currently we're going through economic stress tests to set up for, you know, liquidation days to see how does it handle if the price drops by 60% or 80% or what have you, how efficient is that liquidation process? And then the more efficient the liquidation process is, the less over collateralization we need. But you always got to be a little bit over collateralized because you're never perfect, right? I mean, you can never perfectly efficiently liquidate things because, you know, transactions take time. And so that means that we will have, you know, experts continually watching the timing and process and latencies and market demands and all that sort of thing, so that the collateralization ratio is, you know, high enough to protect the solvency of the loans, right? And then the second stage there is that Inter also has a reserve, so that, you know, you want the over collateralization of your individual loan to cover the volatility that you would normally expect. But in the event that there's a sudden drop that's beyond that's sort of, you know, that you know, once in 3 years kind of drop, the reserve will have capital to cover any shortfalls in those cases. And that's what it's there for. And that, again, protects the solvency and stability of the coin. And this mechanism is shown to be robust in multiple stable tokens around the cryptoverse, right? And so, you know, we're very happy with that. It's very robust. It has no ability to mint assets and cause sort of the terminal explosion that we saw in UST, and that systems like USDD and Titan and so forth have risk of. And so, you know, then you just have the little bit of, well, if I start liquidating now, suddenly there's more Atom for sale, which could drive the price of Atom down and so forth. But the nice thing about it not being our assets, it's not the Agoric build token that is the primary asset here, is, you know, people are going to borrow IST against Atom, but it's going to be a small percentage of Atom. People will borrow IST against Osmo. And obviously, I should note that which collaterals are supported is going to be up to the community, but people will borrow it, let's say, against Osmo, but it won't be most of the Osmo. People will borrow against Juno, but it won't be most of the Juno. And what that means is the selling pressure caused by liquidations, you know, there's good reason, even in a strong market, even in a weak market, for it to not be significant compared to you know, the size of the, you know, the depth of liquidity of Atom sales in general, for example.
I have a question about the collateralization ratios. Maybe you can explain that, because I guess initially,
sure,
the first coin to back it, to back ISP, will be Atom. So how is that collateralization ratio being determined, number one? And then also, walk us through, you just said it's up to the community to add more assets to back ISP or to be able to convert against IST, to borrow against IST. How does that process work? How can somebody propose a new coin to back IST?
Sure.
And how is that collateralization rate being determined?
Great. Yeah. And I love that latter. You know, we will have to come up with nice, clear description of that process. You know, sort of the same way that new chains can come out and start trading their token on Osmosis, we want the same thing where they can start, you know, providing capital so they can have stablecoin against the stable token against their assets, right? Repeat the first question again. I apologize.
How's collateralization ratio managed?
Right. Okay. So we've mentioned it before, and there'll be a formal announcement about it later. But first off, a lot of this was designed in combination with you know, several economists out of RMIT University and we've got a crew from Mercatus Institute and George Mason University that are doing stress tests against the system and so forth. But for the ongoing governance gauntlet, you know, Tarun Chitra's organization that does you know, governance parameter determination for the likes of Aave and so forth. They will be doing regular modeling, regular you know, agent based simulation attack against the current market parameters, the current you know, trade demands, and our architecture to figure out what are optimal values for collateralization ratio, interest rates, liquidation penalties, all that sort of thing. The parameters you need for a CDP. The goal here is to have both, third-party experts that are really putting their that are really focused and spending their time figuring out how to make sure that that the system remains stable and solvent. They're nicely neutral third-party experts. They present their weekly updates to those parameters. There is an econ committee, which I'll talk about in a moment, that verifies that and then publishes approves those to the chain, which makes the typically very minor adjustments on an ongoing basis to keep up with current market conditions. And that will adjust the parameters for over collateralization and so forth as you describe on an ongoing basis. And so it's not a knob that Dean can control, and Dean is not, my goal is bringing in experts that know what they're doing and then be very carefully watching that the experts do what they're supposed to do. All of these folks end up getting the build holders get to vote and to approve all of this, but this is sort of the intended architecture for governance of that level of detail. And that really simplifies the governance process as well. We bring in third-party experts, there's a process that's straightforward, and that should make it much simpler to maintain and improve compared to, I don't know if you've seen articles about the complexity and fatigue in managing MakerDAO. This will be a much cleaner process, we believe. And so as new collateral types are proposed, then they would be vetted for, what's their volatility? Oh, we don't have much history. That means we're going to have a really high number. But if they can put up some reserve in order to cover the potential volatility in their token, then that will raise lower the required over collateralization for each vault of that collateral type and so forth. Now, that exact process, that's going to have to be determined after launch by the economic, by the governance of Inter. But it's basically propose something, gets evaluated for risk that determines the initial parameters that are almost certainly higher than you'd like, but at least it gets, it gets a new chain into the game. And gradually over time, as the chain shows its stability, as you see, the value of that collateral, preserve over time, and you see the governance process and raise confidence in it and so forth, then gradually the over-collateralization requirements would presumably go down for each collateral independently.
So is the liquidation sort of aspect of it the primary big difference from the other systems you've seen? I thought there was also something to do with the way gas worked on the Agoras network and fees. Is that tie into this?
Sorry, I was coughing when you said one of those things. Could you just repeat the sentence?
Sure. Yeah, I was just asking if there was other differentiating features. I thought that there was something to do with the way fees and gas worked on Agoric that played.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So liquidation, unlike many of the other, like MakerDAO and a few others, it can all happen on chain. The contracts in Agoric are, communicate asynchronously. They can wake up to timers and to changing market conditions and all that sort of thing. And so, as the Oracle network, and we in fact, we can talk about that, but we have our own Oracle network. As the Oracle network signals that the price crossed the threshold, the vaults wake up and go, I should liquidate some. They hand it off to the liquidation contract that then can sell it on the local AMM, for example. And it will, the current liquidation algorithm, slowly sells it on the local AMM and allows arbitrage off to, Osmosis and Crescent and wherever, to be able to correct the local AMM price back up to wherever the market average is at the moment. And, then we liquidate more. And arbitrageurs know when we're doing liquidation that the price will be pushed down and they can go and get a bargain. So the Inter protocol is a set of contracts. So the vault mechanism, the liquidation engine, the AMM, a peg stability module, parity stability module, rather, that allows you to trade USDC or similar reference currency one-to-one for IST, so that that enables rapid and efficient arbitrage in order to provide stability and that sort of thing. Now, key characteristic of the Agoric system is that IST is the gas token, is the fee token for the Agoric system. So, you know, my you know, back to this barter economy versus currency economy, you know, my model of things like ETH is, you know, you're paying for execution with ETH, right? Execution gas is like rent or postage. So that's like you're paying your rent using Apple shares and your postage using Google shares because it's different currencies. And, you know, that obviously works, right? Barter economy worked for a long time, but we know it's not great, right? We know we can do better by having something that has the same value over time. And we actually ended up evolving to that in the overall architecture of the agoric economy, you know, because we were designing how do we make a future economy for rapid deployment of lots of small businesses by, you know, millions of JavaScript developers in the world. And in order to have long-term contracts, you've got to have your gas be in a stable token, right? In order to, if the value is speculative, if the value goes up, I'm not going to want to lock up a bunch of money in a contract that's a subscription or a mortgage, because next year it might be worth 10 times as much and now I've overpaid and I can't get my money out. If it's a depreciating asset, if the value of the gas token goes down, which we looked at because that has some nice properties, but that means that I similarly cannot fund a long-term contract because I put I put $1,000 in there, quote $1,000, and by next month, oh, it's 900 and 800, and you know, by the end of the year, this contract's run out of money and die, right? And so it turns out it's got to have some stable value. You've got to be able to lock up value in a long-term contract. And so that's our architecture is the stable token. I mean, we, you know, in order to deliver safe, smart contracts in a stable economy, the key gas fee token has got to be a stable token. And that's what led to the architecture of Inter and IST, actually.
Just a week before UST collapsed, to potentially also put Atom as a reserve to back up UST and to have UST kind of like this native gas token for the entire IBC economy. Is that something that you envision for IST to become this IBC token backed stablecoin, but also an IBC native gas token for everything that is happening within the broader IBC economy?
The answer is yes, that would be wonderful. I think that makes a lot of sense. I don't think our success requires it, and I think we can produce a lot of value for people even if that doesn't happen. To me, the idea of doing that with UST was always frightening because UST would always back out into a particular token controlled by a particular group of people that was not Gaia, that was not Juno, that was not Osmosis. And I know if I'm rolling out my chain, I don't want to be held hostage to their token's value. Right. Because I don't have control of that. That didn't make sense. That, you know, the way it was, they were setting it up, it would have broken the sort of sovereign, loosely coupled nature that I care about. Right. We work very hard to make it so that that's not the case here, where, you know, the individual chain's assets would be able to be used as collateral. And that makes a lot more reasonable for IST to be a gas token that everyone uses on all their chains. That's certainly what it was designed for, is, you know, it's all about making, you know, greasing the wheels of commerce and making it easy to price things, compare the value of something on one chain versus another, you know, compare the value of paying fees to do something versus doing it yourself or doing it off chain, all that sort of stuff, you know, is really made possible by having it, you know, broadly distributed. And, you know, but, you know, to my mind, you get it. Chip Morningstar, one of my engineers, has always had a phrase, don't be greedy and stupid at the same time, right? You know, for it to be broadly distributed, people have to be able to buy in. People have to be able to feel like, you know, theirs and their asset works. And, you know, they've got, you know, a voice and influence and control in how that all happens. And I think that's going to be, you know, that's going to be both valuable and critical to the growth of IST.
So IST is running on the Inter protocol. Is that going to be its own sovereign chain? Is it going to be built somehow on top of Agoric? And who is governing the IST?
So it is built on top of Agoric. Realize though that, you know, that once it's widely deployed, many people will never encounter, you know, don't need to encounter Agoric in order to use IST, right? If I can go to an exchange, get IST, you know, go to Evmos and buy something, you know, and then move it over to Juno and sell it. You know, they never encountered Agoric in that transaction, even though they're using ISD, and they're using ISD that was probably backed by, you know, Atom or Osmo or Evmos or whatever, right? Someone got it somehow from assets, and those people interacted with Agoric, but you know, the person getting ISD did, you know, probably, you know, either onboarded directly from ISD in the long-term future or in the short-term, you know, at an exchange, they got Atom, they went and traded Atom for ISD, and then they went on and did their business.
The minting of ISD happens on which chain?
On Agoric. Yep. Yeah, it is pretty intrinsic to the Agoric economy. And so Agoric is its execution engine. You know, we've got mechanisms to prioritize all of the execution of things for IST, so that continues to function even if there's, you know, an NFT sale. But yeah, the design of Agoric has it as sort of the first class, you know, the first among equals of smart contracts running on Agoric is the set of contracts that comprise IST. Now, Agoric is, you know, extensible and eventually we'll be able to have, you know, multiple chains with horizontal scaling. And so, you know, does it end up having the minting migrating to its, you know, to its own set of machines that are focused entirely on that? Maybe, you know, the nice thing is this is not a, you know, the scaling challenge is pretty mild for this kind of thing, right? You can have lots of chains trading IST without having lots of transactions against Agoric. One can use IST without having to do a transaction against Agoric. And so it's just a matter of the minting and growth of it. But IST has always been Agoric relies on it intrinsically.
Yeah, I have so many more questions, but I guess we also, time in mind, and I know Dean will do this on my channel once where we have
absolutely
discussed that. Billy, you had a question?
Well, I was going to say, you know, just coming up in the last 10, 15 minutes, I saw that we do have a request for a question. I wanted to say, you know, sometimes it's nice to start stacking up requests now while we talk about what we're still talking about, just in case there are questions. And if we do have one, I'd be happy to transition to that.
And while someone raises their hand.
We got one ready.
Okay.
Ruben Metcalf. Let me see. Welcome. Connecting. You here with us? You're muted.
I certainly am. So first of all, it's been super interesting. I rarely get to speak to folks who've been noodling around deep in the economics layer for as long as it sounds like you have. A particular insight which I instinctively agree with is this idea of using these sort of Apple shares as the mechanism for rent or for commission for actually getting things done. If that fluctuates, then it distorts the marketplace and has all mm-hmm. sorts of weird incentives that don't necessarily need to be connected together, right? And one idea that I've been playing around with is taking that a step further, whether or not the stability of whatever medium that you're using could be generated by the individual participant. But that's sort of like annoying enough to generate a lot of, but not so annoying that you can't do it. Something like local storage or local compute. Do you know of anybody who's been playing around with that, or does that make sense as a mechanism?
I do not understand yet.
So picture, if you will, in order to make a transaction on whatever coin, I have to commit mm-hmm. A certain amount of local compute on my own device or local storage on my own device over a period of time. And the premise being that depending on the ratios, you end up sort of providing what nodes historically have been used for in the first instance. But you're sort of pushing that down to each individual node to sort of distribute the load. And obviously that sort of makes sense for more of some systems than other systems. But it seems like a way where a sovereign actor can sort of contribute a sovereign resource. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, so that sounds a little bit like, you know, in order to get a dollar's worth of a token, you need to, you basically, it's a proof of work scheme where you have to, you know, proof of work or proof of space of a dollar's worth of asset value or something. you know, a dollar's worth of value has to be burned in order to produce a dollar's worth of the stable token, is what that sounds a little bit like. This is one of those things where, we have a mechanism that works and resonates well with proof of stake. And so this is an area where I don't want to experiment very much. that we want to move among, we will. One of the unique things about Inter is that we can incorporate future new mechanisms that the community, decides, yes, that's stable enough that we'd be willing to mint IST against that up to some limit, as people add new mechanisms. And, Agoric's an extensible ecosystem. Part of its big, huge value is the programmability of new contracts there. So we'll be able to add, perp-based stable token minting and that sort of thing. The mechanism you described doesn't sound like it retains the value, but if there is something there and it gets, sufficient, coherence and credibility, then it's something that the community could look at.
No, I appreciate that. I look forward to reading more.
Cool. Well, thank you. I should note, so there on inter.trade, you can find the Inter white paper, the Inter protocol white paper. And on agoric.com, from there, you can find the Agoric white paper, which includes, in some sense, by reference, includes Inter, but has more of what does Agoric do after Inter launches. The key is, Inter is the first use case, and as I said, expected to be bigger than Agoric and more, more focused on building up a broad community adoption across the ecosystem.
Hey, thanks for bringing me up. Just touching on the programmability aspect of things. So obviously, it's really early for this kind of stuff, and over collateralization isn't feasible long term for general finance. So I was just wondering, have you ever thought that the over collateralization model could change at some point to something like Reflexer Finance's model? And have you looked into Reflexer? Does it interest you?
So I have not. I don't think I've looked at Reflexer. I certainly haven't looked at it recently. Our economists and our product managers obviously follow a bunch of the newer models coming out on a pretty regular basis. As I was mentioning, a key to the architecture is it is straightforward to add new mechanisms for minting IST, but that's got to be approved both by the economic committee, which is, a committee elected by the build DAO of economic experts that understand these things and are compensated to spend the right amount of time to come up with conservative answers. And they're accountable to the build DAO, which is everyone who holds staked build tokens on Agoric. And one of the primary functions of the Agoric chain is to create the institutions for a stable economy. And so as new mechanisms, as mechanisms get proposed that look like they are credible mechanisms for better capital efficiency while still preserving high assurance of solvency and stability, absolutely we expect to add those. We have several proposals already for enhancements that would reduce the required over collateralization and even move into the realm of not needing on-chain collateralization, being able to use off-chain collateralization and that sort of thing. But we start very conservative, and that's something that we will grow carefully. One of the key elements for that is, of course, making sure that every new element has debt limits so that it can't put the stability of the overall currency at risk, right? The reserve will protect the value of IST from volatility in individual mechanisms. And so if there's a new mechanism to reduce over-collateralization, if people can buy hedges against the value of their collateral going down such that it'll automatically pay off their debt, that's great, and that will result in less over-collateralization as long as there's that rich secondary market running on the system. So as those start to appear, and the thing is, you know, those can't all start at once. Some of these things are enabled by having a strong economy. And so once we have a strong economy, then we'll start to see secondary markets that are robust and that can allow for, deeper, more efficient markets. One of the characterizations I occasionally give is, I mean, USD is an algo stablecoin based on long-term value of real estates and long-term contracts, right? And so once we get enough economy going in the digital world, you can start to look at that. You can start to rely on that. But that's a ways away.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Diesel, for your question. Let's do two quick ones, very fire questions. We'll get a wild stake C2 here. I think it's the first time Stake C2 and Crypto C2 are spotted in the same room.
Are you crossing the streams?
I don't know. So Stake C2, to ask your question, then we got Philip for the final question.
Yeah, what's up, guys? It was great bumping into you, Dean, during consensus. just a question regarding the Agoric rollout plan and, let's say, road to mainnet. Do you have any details to share, maybe dates? And also, will there be an airdrop to fellow delegators in the Cosmos ecosystem?
I didn't understand the last question. Will it be what?
Do you have also a plan to do an airdrop to delegators? You know.
You're a bad person, Stacey. Okay, so we have a roadmap, agoric.com/roadmap. And that, you know, and as with anything hard, there are elements that are uncertain. Right now we have third-party security audits going on, and we have a third-party economic stress test and performance testing happening on the system. And we still have a few more features to finish in June, July. So the goal is a RC0 internal to be then deploy out to our validators and test nets and so forth around the end of July. And then then the target is launch in Q3. So I want to be able to relax at Cosmoverse and talk about all the awesome stuff that we've done and what we're going to do so far. So, that's my goal. But, we're going to make sure that it's robust. So if that takes longer because people found an issue, then it's going to take longer.
Was that an alpha leak that you're coming to Cosmoverse?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I'm in the Cosmos ecosystem, so like everyone else in the Cosmos ecosystem, I'm coming to Cosmoverse.
That's what's up. Just make sure this time you don't take two keynote slots while just having reserved one, because last time you went heavy over time.
All right, so I should reserve two up front, is what you're saying.
I think we should reserve two for you, yeah.
Okay, good.
Just block two slots for you to make sure. We've got Phil here. Last question.
Yes, you have to unmute yourself, Phil.
Yeah, we got to wait, but you're still muted.
Oh, okay. No, sorry, guys. This is the first time I'm trying this thing. So, I just had a quick question. So, regarding the US dollar thing, is this going to be a one first step to include further currencies? Or have you ever thought as well about the world currency unit? I haven't seen anyone working about that thing, which I think could be a more interesting approach if what you're looking for is stable value as a collateral for fees or whatever in an ecosystem, as we intend currencies, national currencies, to eventually turn out even more volatile in the future. Isn't there a turning point in which having kind of a world currency unit wouldn't be better than just the US dollar?
So the thing that the Agoric system requires is designed for, as I said, rapid, safe composition of new smart contracts and rapid, build fast, earn fast, right? I can rapidly produce this stuff in the most popular programming language on the planet with the best development tools on the planet, and I can rapidly deploy it and start making money. And that means a solid economy with a stable token. So what we require is the security, safety, and a stable token to be used for pricing things from day to day. Stable to me means low volatility. right? It doesn't mean it's pegged to a particular thing. It doesn't mean it's parity to a particular thing. And our economists are very clear that, you know, what people misuse peg for isn't quite right. But in any case, so you know, what it means is the value from day to day is relatively low volatility. So, you know, that's what agoric requires. What the, you know, what IST is set up for is it is an accounting convenience if, in general, if right now it's value, the value of IST is close to a dollar, because that means that the vast number of businesses in the world, most businesses, in spite of how I realize how annoying it is to anyone who is not US, but most businesses can perfectly well handle things that are priced in dollars, right? And you know, whereas, you know, I will admit that most US businesses are confused by currency that has a symbol other than a dollar, right? And so, you know, that means that for convenience of rapid deployment of lots of small business by lots of developers, having it be accounting to a dollar, so I can go, well, should I use this Web3 thing or should I use a Web2 thing? Should I, you know, trade over here or should I buy it from a local store? Those kinds of things, it's just a lot easier. I have no other reason to tie it to a dollar than that. And if it makes sense in the future for it to switch off of that to euro or to some other priced bucket of what have you, the mechanism doesn't care. What the mechanism cares is that it has a robust oracle that can tell you what's the price of atom in some, in, you know, lunar simoleons. And if that's our new stable, you know, reference that we all, that the community chooses to migrate to, that's fine. As long as its value doesn't change from day to day, I can still have long-term contracts that can compare whether rent went up today versus tomorrow.
Let's target the price of the Big Mac. Use the Big Mac index as the new stable token peg.
That's a whopper of a statement. Yeah.
Hey, Dean Tribble, everybody. Cool. Well, maybe let's wrap up on that note then. Anything else for Dean Cryptocito? Closing remarks, call to actions.
Dean, I'm looking forward to see you in on my channel. I think we should make that happen very, very soon. Because
yes, absolutely.
We didn't even get to talk about oracles and other stable coins and how it differentiates. So there's a lot more to it, and I look forward to see both of you at Cosmoverse later this year. It's going to be pretty big.
Heck yeah. Yep. I look forward to being on your channel, and I look forward to seeing you in person in Medellin.
Thanks for joining, everybody. Thanks for co-hosting us always. See you guys next week.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was the Cosmos Hub Fireside Chat number 18, discussing IST and agoric updates with Dean Tribble, recorded on Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. If you want to keep listening, head on over to TerraSpaces.org/donate and show some support.
When we blow through the dust, volcanoes erupt. No one ever guessed that the game would be tough. Keep it hands off when the play is a bust. Plain old and just, so we keep it on the one. Blast off on the two, help me see the three. Third eye open wide, checking out the scene. Laser beam focused, star scream jokers. Living off the fat of the people they approach. Tell me what happens when the land fights back. With the cliffs at our backs, make the last stand matter. No one ever planned for the famine on deck. We was walking all a wreck with a dead man swagger. Sitting in a little den, envisioning the middlemen. Listen to the fatal man play a little ditty, then talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. Sitting in a little den,
division in the middlemen. Listen to the fiddle man play a little ditty, then talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian, lost in the maze trying to make the next bill. One gave a shit till the drugs all dried up, everybody died from a bad batch of Lysol, but it didn't matter, we was all hyped up when the pedal lit the metal, he just didn't have the right skill. Watched in the daytime till the night curfew, rats in a cage till they make time to murk you. Got a little job that falls under my purview, we gotta get this mob away from the bird's view. Gotta find cover, wipe off the bird poop, right off the work while you try on the worst juice. Blinded by perps who try to reverse truth, slide like Fox News just trying to lie to you. Eating up the slop like a bunch of hungry vagrants, I can't wait for the day they lock us up in stasis. Mock up a basement, could call me resilient, waiting for the internet to make me a billion. Den envision in the middle men, listen to the fiddle man play a little ditty, then talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian, lost in the maze trying to make the next billion. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian, lost in the maze trying to make the next billion.
Imagine a world in which an old dying man's last dying wish is fulfilled.
Alexa, can you play that one C-Fi space where he clowned all the SafeMoon and XRP bag holders and then told everyone to buy Luna because it was going to 1,000?
I'm confused why we're not talking about the fact that you can easily, like, 300x your money on XRP. Like,
you know, son, I remember a time. Alexa, enough. I'm trying to reminisce now. I remember a time before Terra Spaces existed, when things that were said on random Twitter spaces would just get lost to the proverbial black hole of time.
That's the best bet.
Why isn't Luna in wind turbines?
Hey, guys,
I'm reading all about these wind
guys,
turbines.
Do you mind if I explain Cardano a little bit? Because I've been in Cardano since like 2018 and I can give you a full breakdown.
Just when you thought it was safe to shill shitcoins.
Oh my god, you guys, I don't know what to do. So much blood. It's so red.
From the creators of Your Exit Liquidity, in association with We All Love to Hear Ourselves Talk, Inc. For more information, go to terraspaces.org/donate. Terra Spaces.